The NFL draft is just 3 days away, and we take a different perspective at prospects on today's show, looking at overrated and underrated players. To do so, we have Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com to join us. It's all coming up on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. I'm Brian Caribou of 247sports.com, and this is Railbird Central on Cheesehead TV. This morning, we're previewing the NFL draft, and we have a guest joining us on the phone to do so. This morning, we have Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com. Mr. Richner, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Very good. We're glad to have you on the show. I'm excited to talk to you because we've had Paul Beshear of Prediction Machine on the show before. It's my first time talking to you, and I've known the name Matt Richner over the years, but I got to know you just a few weeks ago when I was listening to Fox Sports The Audible podcast with Bruce Feldman, and you joined him. And I thought it was interesting. You kind of gave your background a little bit on the show, and you actually interned with the Seattle Seahawks, and that was during the Mike Holmgren era, which I think our listeners can kind of relate to being a Packers show. Can you tell us a little bit about your time with the Seahawks organization and your background?
Yeah, I was there during Holmgren's last year, so that'd be the 2008-2009 season. I was an intern in the public relations department, and there probably isn't a man that just garners more respect and has more integrity, especially in the NFL game, but I think just I've never met anybody that just commands a room just like Mike Holmgren. It was a wonderful experience. In terms of my background, I have a master's degree in sports management, and part of my master's program, I wrote my thesis on the NFL draft and using stats as a way to analyze player versus kind of the subjective analysis, you know, the fast hands, explosive ability, you know, kind of these scouting terms that kind of depends on the eye of the beholder. So that's kind of my background in a very quick nutshell.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about some of your rankings today. You can check those out at PredictionMachine.com for our listeners. And I know when we've had Paul Beshear on the show, I've always kind of liked it because he's not afraid to look outside the box. And if I'm correct, his rankings were strictly objective from a formula analysis. Is there any subjection to your rankings? I was taking a look at them, or is it strictly objective as well?
It's strictly objective, the actual ranking. Sometimes my kind of write-ups and evaluation of the player, I have some subjective analysis. But in terms of how I come up with my rankings 1 through, you know, 450, I think we have this year, okay, a number of prospects, by position group and overall, is all objectively based upon their statistical production, their team's efficiencies in different areas, and kind of different metrics that both Paul and I, we use in coming up with our rankings. So yeah, we do have some players that every year kind of, some people think are first rounders, and Paul and I look at each other going, man, there's no absolute way this guy can be a first rounder. And, you know, sure enough, they go that high. And lately, we've been pretty successful in being able to call out the draft bust over the last couple of years.
There's rankings for both Paul and yourself at Prediction Machine. Are your formulas a little bit different, or what's the difference there? I mean, they're very alike in some respects, but just slightly different in others.
Paul and I both have different formulas, which is also kind of fun because you would think sometimes with different formulas that you would come up with different results. And you're right. Paul and I, you know, our top fives might be the same, but who we have 2 through 4 in a lot of ways might be a little bit different. So it's always kind of fun for he and I to kind of share each other's rankings, you know, the weeks of when we post our rankings for each position group to see who has where. And more often than not, and sometimes I like to think I'm going to be able to like slip a guy up into the top five, and sure enough, Paul will have him up there too. So yeah, we use different formulas, but at the same time, we usually come out with about the same results.
Well, let's talk about some of these players, because I wanted to pick your brain on guys you have either rated unusually high or unusually low, at least compared to like other draft analysts that are out there. Mm-hmm. When you look at, you know, top lists or mock drafts or anything like that. And we could kind of maybe put in the perspective of underrated, overrated. But let's just kind of go by position here, starting with wide receivers. You have Devontae Parker of Louisville as your number one wideout. You're the only person I've seen who's got Devontae Parker as their number one. Most everybody has Amari Cooper and Kevin White as you know, kind of the top two consensus guys. You're outside the box on that. What makes Devontae Parker a number one wide receiver?
First of all, if you look at his measurables, he's 6'3", 209, 210 pounds. So he has the frame and size that you definitely like, especially for someone that's going to be a number one wideout. You're kind of your big target. Second, his production and efficiency while in college was one of the highest I've seen in the last couple of years. He had the third highest touchdown rate, a touchdown once every 4.7 receptions. He caught the ball. That's the which what I really liked about Parker was that he played with Teddy Bridgewater for first couple of years. So you expect his production to be really high. But then when Bridgewater goes to the NFL, Parker was still, even though he had an injury that caused him to miss the first couple games of the season, he was still able to maintain that high level production. So it didn't matter who his quarterback was. That's something that's similar to like a Calvin Johnson and a Larry Fitzgerald. When you look at their college production, they didn't have great college quarterbacks, but yet they produced at a high level. For me, I have a primetime score, a wide receiver rating system that's similar to a quarterback rating formula. Parker had the third highest rating in this year's class. He had a rating very similar to A.J. Green coming out of college. One thing that I look at is big play wide receiver plays. So receptions of going for 25 or more yards, he had the fourth highest in the class at 26% of his receptions. So for me, he just kind of embodies he does everything extremely well, and he has those measurable qualities that you like. So for me, even though I just don't see how Parker isn't number one, just because I compared him to A.J. Green coming out. He just has, he's a stud wide receiver. He has good hands. He has measurables that you like. He, to me, is a classic number one wide receiver in the NFL.
Okay, so let's compare him to Kevin White of West Virginia, who you have ranked as your number six wide receiver. So by no means are you saying he's undraftable or anything like that, but I mean, there's nobody out there who's got Kevin White as low as number six that I've seen. Once again, you know, him and Amari Cooper way up there. So why Kevin White, you know, lower than most people?
In a lot of ways, Kevin White is that perfect, like, boomer bust wide receiver. He has the measurables that, again, that you like, 6'3", 215 pounds. He posted phenomenal times and numbers at the combine, and he had a great senior season at West Virginia to show scouts and everybody else that he can be a quality wide receiver in the NFL. The only problem is that if you look historically at who the bust wide receivers are in the NFL coming out of college, most of the time they were one-year wonders. And when you look at Kevin White, 76% of his college production came in just one season. That's mm-hmm. a high probability of bust. What you really like to see is around that like 50 to 45%. Reggie Wayne would be like 33%. Larry Fitzgerald was at 48%. So when you kind of look at some of the big busts coming from that wide receiver group, that's where he has. His measurables and combine don't really reflect, I feel like, his overall numbers. While he posted these great times, his numbers of being like a big play wide receiver were actually really low. 15% of his receptions went for 25 or more yards, which ranks him 31st among this year's wide receivers class. So I say, if he's so big and so strong, why didn't he show that in college? And again, at West Virginia, the track record of wide receivers in that offense haven't fared well in the NFL. You have Tavon Austin, Stedman Bailey. Prior to coming to Morgantown, head coach Dana Holgerson there, he had Justin Blackman, who has been another disappointment both on and off the field. So while Kevin White has all the measurables and kind of that boomer bust quality that you'd like to you know, that we kind of label him as. His efficiency numbers and productions are similar to Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson. Both guys were second-round picks last year by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think teams would be wise to minimize the risk with White, select him in the second or third round if they can, and then just hopefully he can grow and develop into that big play wide receiver that everybody hopes he is, but not necessarily what he's shown in college.
So again, your suggestion would be that he goes in the second or third round, not that you think he will, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we do everything what we think should happen, not necessarily what we think will happen in our on our site. So while I think he should go in the second or third round, I believe, obviously, like everybody else, he's going to be probably a top 10 or top 15 pick.
Very good. Let's take a look at the defensive side of the football. I think this is where some of the Green Bay Packers' biggest needs are on defense. Mm-hmm. Let's start with edge defenders. You've got a guy rated unusually high, Max Vallis, I think his name is pronounced. I could be pronouncing that wrong. You've got him as your number two pass rusher. This is a redshirt sophomore. He is way off the radar of most people. If I'm correct, I think he got an NFL Combine invite. But, I mean, he's not being talked about as a day one, even a day two guy. He's a day three guy, most people. But you got him as your number two pass rusher. Who is Max Vallis?
You kind of touched on it. He's young. He's a redshirt sophomore. But similar to somebody who also was a redshirt sophomore a couple of years ago, Alvin Smith came into the league and had a really good, successful initially career. He's kind of gotten trouble off the field. But Vallis is a young player. He decided to kind of make himself available, even though I think he probably should have come back to school. But at 6'5", 251 pounds, he kind of has that size and that prototypical mold of an elite outside linebacker. What was most impressive to me about Vallis is this snap to QB hit time last year. I register the time it takes, obviously, from the snap of the ball to the time he makes contact, whether it's a sack, tackle for a loss, or even just a quarterback hit with the quarterback's already released the ball. His average time was 2.67 seconds, one of the fastest average times amongst outside linebackers in this class. One metric I use is I calculate the total number of impact plays, so that's sack, tackle for loss, interceptions, forced fumbles, kind of et cetera. This gives me an idea of the sort of impact or bearing a defensive player will have on any given game. Dallas had 47 overall impact plays, but his average on a per-game basis is 2.14, which is the second-highest average of impact plays amongst all outside linebackers. Again, he's young. He will need time to grow and develop, but he's proven that he can be effective and impactful player when he steps on the field. So I think somebody, like you kind of mentioned, he'll probably be a day three, and I understand that draft pick, but if you can kind of grow and develop him, I think you might be able to find your diamond in the rough with a player like him.
Very interesting. Compared to Max Vallis, a player you've got rated unusually low compared to others, maybe an overrated player, Shane Ray of Missouri, your number nine defensive end. Why as low as number nine with Shane Ray?
He's an undersized defensive end who had a difficult time stopping opponents rushing attack to his gap responsibility. He's a liability in that aspect. In terms of his ability to attack opposing quarterbacks, while he's posted impressive overall statistics, his average snap to QB hit time was over 3 seconds. The threshold for most dominant defensive end, that's well above the threshold for most dominant defensive end. So while a lot of his production came, which we kind of labeled as covered sacks. When watching the tape, he was consistently outproduced by teammate Marcus Golden. Opponents tended to actually leave Ray in a lot of one-on-one situations and double-team Golden. And Golden a lot of times pushed the pocket over to Ray's side, and then he was able to kind of clean up. I think Shane Ray is best suited as a situational pass rusher, someone who can kind of come in and play in sub-packages. Ray had a total of his average impact plays was 1.3 impact plays per game, where Golden averaged 1.47. Well, that might not seem like a big difference. Over the span of an NFL season, that could be a couple sacks, an interception, and a forced fumble. These are all kind of plays that can change the outcome of the game or even a season, depending on when they happen. So that's why I think Shane Ray isn't necessarily the dominant pass rusher that a lot of people see him as. That's why I have him as the number nine defensive end in this year's class.
Yeah, especially when compared to if Golden's the one being double-teamed, it's even more impressive, I think. with inside linebackers now. Your number one inside linebacker is Paul Dawson of TCU. I don't think you have him unusually high, because I know Mike Mayock of the NFL Network, for example, also has Dawson. But I think most people have him behind, like, Eric Kendricks, at least. Why would you have Paul Dawson over a guy like Eric Kendricks?
Dawson kind of displays the special instincts that put him in the right spot at the right time. He received a lot of unwanted attention and negative press at the combine because he didn't post like the great measurables that everybody liked to see. But his play at TCU, I think, speaks a lot of perfect examples of why you should pay attention to what they do on the field matter, what they do on the field versus what they do at the combine or the pro days. He had the second highest average for impact plays for an inside linebacker with a score of 1.41 impact plays per game. Put that in comparison, Chris Borland, a Wisconsin alum and a favorite of mine last year, had an average of 1.94 impact plays per game. Borland, like Dawson, didn't check off every measurable that scouts had when it came to game. But when it came to game time, Dawson always seemed to be at the right spot at the right time. I like just the fact that he can be a three-down linebacker. His ability in pass coverage is one of the top pass coverage inside linebackers in this year's draft class. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He understands his zone coverage and his man-to-man skills are pretty good. I just see Dawson as this really good all-around player. That's someone that you can be kind of plug and play, and he's been able to play that leadership role for a couple of years now at TCU, and that's what a lot of Mike linebackers need to be in the NFL, is that leader, that vocal leader, and be able to get their defense in the right scheme. And I just see Dawson as the perfect fit for that in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he's really good too, and could be a steal if he were to reach day two or something like that. All right, so at the same position, a guy you've got rated unusually low, maybe a little bit overrated player by most people, Benardrick McKinney of Mississippi State. He's your number 14 inside linebacker. What pushes him down the list?
Again, similar to Kevin White, is that McKinley, he has the size. He's 6'4", 246 pounds, so he's that perfect, you know, prototypical size. He has the speed that a lot of people like. The only problem is when he's asked to cover, he has a hard time making open field tackles. He has a hard time in pass coverage responsibility. He gave up a large number of yards after contact. He didn't have a single interception for his career. I went back the last 10 years, and I can't find a single inside linebacker that was drafted in the first round that didn't have a single interception. So it just kind of speaks to like who he is and the fact that he just wasn't asked to do a whole lot. A true Mike linebacker, I've already mentioned, should be kind of that leader on the field, someone who makes all the calls. McKinley didn't have that responsibility in college. He had other teammates were the ones that were out there making calls. He was just asked to kind of be up there and do his own little thing. So when now he's going to come to the NFL and he's going to be asked to take on that more responsibility, well, he wasn't asked to do that in college, there probably is a reason why. And I'm not quite sure the NFL is the greatest training ground for teaching somebody how to be that leader. He'll have the steep learning curve, and opponents will attack him in coverage. So he might end up just being a two-down linebacker, not someone that I don't feel like you can take in the first round if they have that much limitation to their game.
All right, let's look at the cornerback position. Packers need help here. They lost two guys in free agency, Tremont Williams, Devon House, so they could certainly be looking at cornerback early in the draft. Now, the guy you've got is your number one overall cornerback, Ifo Ekpre-Olamu of Oregon. Matt, you're the only person I've seen with this guy as their number one corner. Why does this Oregon product get the number one spot?
He was one of the top-rated corners coming into last season and throughout the season. His fault, and not necessarily to his credit, would be up into the Rose Bowl game against Florida State. Then he tore his ACL. So a lot of scouts and everybody are a little wary because he's going to have he's not going to be ready to go until about September, October.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really liked about Olamu was the fact that he was left on an island in a lot of those Oregon games. He was asked to cover the top wide receiver. If you look at the USC games through the years, he was able to shut down Marquise Lee and Nelson Aguilar. He's 5'10", you know, he's under 200 pounds, so he's, you know, doesn't necessarily have that Richard Sherman, kind of that big build that a lot of people like. But the fact of the matter is he had 8 forced fumbles, which I really look for in a lot of wide receivers in the sense of, Someone like Charles Tillman, who was able, if opponents were able to catch the ball, he was able to come in and punch it out. And I feel like Omu has that skill set. His 39 pass breakups, 9 interceptions. He was just an overall playmaker for the Oregon Duck defense. It's someone that I felt like was a catalyst to help make that defense into one of the top defensive units over the last couple of years. So while he has an injury bug, I don't think teams should be worried because he did have like over 50 career starts for his career. So it wasn't somebody that had a whole bunch of injuries. Unfortunately, he just sustained one unfortunately at the wrong time.
All right, now a guy you've got rated unusually low, Byron Jones of UConn. You have rated as your number 14 cornerback. You're going to kind of dash my dreams a little bit because I really like Byron Jones and think of him as a first-round type of player, maybe to the Green Bay Packers even. But why do you have him so low?
Well, yeah. Byron Jones, well, I think he's the third-round prospect. I think this year's cornerback class is so has so much depth and talent that while I don't think he's a first-rounder, I think he's probably like an early day three. So, you know, I think you and I are probably about 30 picks off, so it's not necessarily that much difference. Byron Jones, his problem to me was his yards after the catch. And sometimes he would gamble. I felt like in zone coverage, he gave up more of his receptions in zone coverage than man-to-man. While a lot of people say, well, that's great, there is an issue that he has a kind of a limited ability. He likes the big quarterbacks. And I think maybe there could be at times, maybe in college, he just wasn't challenged, and that could be it. But other times that he was kind of playing a little too far off his guy. I know he has the measurables that you obviously went to the combine and just did fantastic numbers. I mean, world-class numbers in some of those events. But to me, he just kind of gambled a little too much, and he has a little bit too many little flaws on his game that I feel like, statistically speaking, is an efficiency metric that he needed to kind of work on. That's why I kind of feel like he should be a little bit lower than that first rounder.
All right, safety positions. Again, number one guy, I think you're the only person I've seen with Curtis Drummond of Michigan State as your number one safety. And again, I mean, not like he's off the radar of most people, but I don't think there's anybody who's gotten number one. Why is he number one?
I like the fact that he's been a four-year starter, 52 games played. He's for a defensive unit that's been consistently one of the top 10 defensive units in college football. There at Michigan State, I got another guy that was the vocal leader. Statistically, in his efficiency numbers, he had 21 pass breakups, 12 interceptions, 3 forced fumbles. He had a number of 14 tackles for loss. So the guy that can play not only in the back end, but and he can walk down into the box. So he's kind of that dual threat, strong safety, free safety role, whatever you'd like to see. He averaged 1.62 impact plays per game from that safety spot. So here's someone that I thought it was just a classic all-around player. Again, he might not check all the measurable boxes, and I think maybe because he did play 4 years, everybody's kind of seen him and seen what he's done, and now it's kind of that ho-hum, like, yeah, we expect him to be good. I think he's just one of these classic guys that if you take in the second or third round, then you're eventually going to get a player that plays 8 to 10 years, is a quality player. He might not necessarily be an elite Pro Bowl player, but he's someone who's a consistent starter. And that's where I see Curtis Drummond as kind of being like the low probability of him being a bust and kind of a high probability of him being just a quality, successful NFL player.
Kind of the opposite situation. You've got Landon Collins of Alabama as your number six safety. I think most people have him as their number one. Where does the difference come here?
His lack of playmaking ability. Here's a guy that really, he was just a full-time starter for 1 year at Alabama. I know that they played a lot of nickel coverage until he got some time his sophomore year. But as a junior, that was really his only season where he was a true starter. And a lot of his plays and his best attribute was when he was came into the box. So he's someone that I compared a lot to Deion Buchanan, last year's first-round safety that was taken by the Arizona Cardinals. And Arizona, you know, kind of had him as that hybrid linebacker for this year. So I see Landon Collins who's kind of sitting in that same spot. Unfortunately, there's just not enough teams out there that kind of utilize that same system. I still think Landon Collins is just young and inexperienced. He only has 13 pass breakups. He had, you know, 5 interceptions. His average impact plays per game was 1.18. Again, Curtis Drummond, 1.62. So you kind of have that half more impact plays by Curtis Drummond than you do Landon Collins. I think Landon Collins is a little too much green behind the ears. So for me, he's going to take a season or two to develop before you kind of get that true safety. I agree with you. He's probably going to be a first-round pick. But this year's safety class is one of the weakest of all the different position groups in this year's class. He might be overdrafted just because the next best guy might not go to like the late second round.
I do agree. I do the safety profile for our NFL draft publication, and so I'm very, you know, watched a lot of film on these guys, and I agree this is kind of a weak class of safeties. And I just thought it was notable, too, that I very much agree with you. You have Jakiski Tartt of Samford not even appearing in your top 25 safeties, and I tend to I just when I watched the safeties and I watched him, I didn't see anything special with Jakiski Tartt. In fact, I thought if you're going to go with one of the small school guys, Dean Marlowe would be a whole lot better of James Madison than Tartt would. So I just thought that was interesting. But Matt, there was a lot of positions that we didn't get to: quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends. Can you go rapid fire here for a little bit?
Yeah, shoot them off. I'll try to keep it to few words or less.
Okay. Very good. Cause I kept you a long time already, and we appreciate the time you've given us. But quarterbacks, I take a look at your rankings, and they mostly fall in line with, I think, what most people view the quarterbacks. But the one guy who stuck out to me, you've got Nick Marshall of Auburn, a guy who is trying to become a cornerback. You still have him among the quarterbacks. Do you think that's his better fit in the NFL?
I don't. I do think DB is probably going to be a better overall fit. But if you're a team that takes him, let's say, in the seventh round or even undrafted free agent, mm-hmm. you're going to use him as your emergency quarterback. So you don't necessarily have to have three quarterbacks on your roster. As long as he kind of has a basic understanding of kind of the playbook, that will allow teams to free up a spot. In addition, if he is ever called to play quarterback in the NFL, he's going to be such a wild card that he might be able to actually win you come into like the second half of a game or play a quarter, and you can be able to use him as a mobile quarterback. He might not actually lose you a game in the short term. I don't think long term he's going to be a Pro Bowl or anything like that, but if you kind of look at it in a short term and a vacuum, you might be able to use him. He might be able to kind of keep us alive for that game and kind of till we can heal up. So that's why I think he might be a quality, like undrafted priority free agent.
Interesting. I always thought it would be a transition for Nick Marshall in the NFL, but I thought he had the raw skills to play QB. At running back, a guy you've got rated a little bit higher than most, I think, Carlos Williams of Florida State, kind of a big, bruising running back. What do you see in him?
You kind of just nailed it. His ability on short yardage situations, on third down and like less than 3 yards, if you look at all the running backs in this year's class, Carlos Williams had a conversion rate, so that means he could recorded a first down 76% of the time. That's the highest amongst this year in any of this year's running backs. Here's a guy that also got kind of stronger, quote, as the game got longer. A lot of people throw that out there, but if you look at statistically, a lot of running backs actually stay about the average from first half to second half. Carlos Williams gained an extra 1.7 yards per carry in the second half compared to the first half. So someone like an Eddie Lacy, as you guys Green Bay Packers fans know, he does get stronger and he's able to kind of mow down opponents. So that's why I see Carlos Williams as being like one of these kind of mid-round gems that I think people are often overlooking. And then I think when you see next year, he might be one of these leaders amongst rookie running backs for total carries and total yards.
At the tight end position, you have as your number 5 tight end Darren Waller of Georgia Tech. Of course, he didn't even play tight end in college. He was a wide receiver. What makes you think he can make the transition?
First of all, his size at 6'5", 240, he's very similar to a Julius Thomas or Cameron Jordan when you look at what size they were when they came into the NFL. Secondly, he came from a Georgia Tech offense that asked him to run block. Everybody knows they kind of run that triple option. So run blocking isn't necessarily foreign to him. So I kind of feel like with his size and his experience already, he's already a mismatch for amongst linebackers and safeties. And so it's going to take maybe a season to kind of develop him into a tight end, but I think the framework is already there. He has good hands. He knows how to run block. So, again, he's a little bit of a project player, but somebody that I think could then develop into a quality tight end in the NFL.
Along the offensive line, again, looking at your rankings, somebody I think you've got rated a little bit lower than most, Jake Fisher of Oregon. You've got him as your number 10 offensive tackle. I think some people have him going as high as the first round. Where's the difference come?
His difference is the fact that he's really suited for the zone blocking scheme. So when you kind of, when I do the rankings for offensive linemen, you have to put in the fact that are they for man blocking, power blocking scheme, or zone blocking. And so while I like Jake Fisher, I just don't think he's suited for every offensive scheme and fit in the NFL. I think there are guys in front of them who, while they might not necessarily end up being offensive tackles, they might be able to slide into guard, like, say, Brandon Sheriff from Iowa. I just think their ability and their versatility to multiple schemes are kind of better suited than someone Jake Fisher. I agree with you. I think Jake Fisher is a phenomenal talent. I think you might see Philadelphia jump up and scoop him for their scheme. But for me, that's why I have him at the 10th overall offensive tackle in this year's class.
I gotcha. The last position I think we haven't addressed yet, defensive line. Among your rankings, you have Darius Filon of Arkansas as your number two pass rushing, or is it run stuffing defensive lineman? What? I don't know much about Darius Filon. Tell me about him.
Here's a guy that's kind of that classic short, stocky, scrappy defensive tackle. The thing that I liked about Filon is immediately when he went in and became a starter there for Arkansas, he pretty much shut down opponents' rushing attack. If you look at opponents only averaged 115 yards, rushing yards a game. They only allowed 11 rushing touchdowns all season. That's in the SEC. He went up against some pretty big boys down there, and he was able to kind of hold his ground, kind of be that anchor along the defensive line. So, again, another player that, while I don't think he's going to go in the second or third round, I think he's going to be that classic defensive tackle that people often overlook. Something similar to like a Brandon Kneebane for the Seattle Seahawks, who came out from Cal, kind of the similar measurables and similar production and efficiency numbers. He's gone on to have an 8-9-year career and kind of been one of those central points for that Seahawks defense. That's where I see Darius Filon comparing to someone I think could be a nice hidden gem and somebody that I think could possibly be a long-term starter for an NFL.
Oh, man. Matt, thank you so much for doing this, going through all these guys. The way you're able to just cite these stats off the top of your head is amazing, I think. Thank you for joining us. I know I'm putting you on the spot here. You seem to have so many under-the-radar guys. Do you have a draft sleeper that you just really love that you think is going to do well that most people don't have rated too high? Maybe we talked about them already, so...
I like Titus Davis, the wide receiver from Central Michigan. Here's a guy that had the second highest wide receiver score in this year's class. He broke a lot of single season and career numbers of a guy named Antonio Brown, now playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So here's a guy that, when he caught the ball, 73% of his receptions end up going for first down. When I look at his metrics and efficiencies and compare him to the previous draft, he compares a lot to Devontae Adams, last year's second-round pick for the Green Bay Packers. So to me, I just feel like Titus Davis, while he might not have the measurables, he has the production and efficiency that just mirror a lot of the guys who've gone on to be successful in the NFL. So that's where I think Titus Davis might be this year's top kind of hidden gem of all the NFL drafts.
Very cool, very cool. We're looking forward to it. We find out very soon where all these guys are going, starting on Thursday night with the start of the NFL draft. Matt, again, thank you so much for joining us. Love your insight and glad you could share it on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. You guys have a great day.
All right, take care. Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com joining us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well. Wow, we just went through a ton of prospects. And if we kind of continue with our regular segments here on Cheesehead TV, Packers News of the Day. Talk about a few more here. I don't have any analysis on these guys, but reported by Bob McGinn in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday on Sunday, he listed a few more players that had visited the Packers on pre-draft visits that had previously been unreported, at least to my eye. These are guys the Packers flew in to Lambeau Field to meet with them before the NFL draft. Packers showing an unusually high amount of interest in these guys. And the ones that Bob McGinn reported that I haven't seen anywhere else, just to list them off to you. So names you can kind of keep an eye on here. Safety Ryan Murphy of Oregon State. Tight end Mitchell Henry of Western Kentucky. Tight end Kennard Blackman of UAB, Alabama, Birmingham. H-back Malcolm Johnson of Mississippi State, kind of a fullback slash tight end kind of guy, and cornerback Robertson Daniel of BYU Brigham Young. Just some names to keep in the back of your head that the Packers show kind of unusually high interest to bring them all the way into Green Bay to talk to them, to put them through a physical, whatever. Just recently here as we kind of wrap up our NFL draft preview or coverage or whatever. I love doing this so much, talking about these kind of guys. I'm going to kind of miss it when the NFL draft is over because I just love the speculation part of it. But that's, you know, as far as Packers news goes, that just about does it because, in NFL draft mode here, very little else going on with the team right now. Kind of they're not really going to make any transactions. I think they're going to kind of wait till the NFL draft is over and they start filling out the roster and start getting close to that 90-man limit. So not a whole lot else going on in the world of the Green Bay Packers right now. But as far as the day ahead goes, our final segment on the show, former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman Bill Ferrario is hosting a pre-draft special Monday evening on Fox 55 in Wausau, Wisconsin. The affiliate over there is part of the, I believe it, they call it the Green and Gold Gridiron Show. If you happen to live in the central part of the state of Wisconsin, they actually record the show live at Scani's Ale House in Schofield, Wisconsin, just a suburb of Wausau, if you will. And so that takes place Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. So get some insight from a former Packers player and recorded live. So people, it's free and open to the public. Go check it out if you're in the area. Otherwise, we're just waiting for the NFL draft now, and it's just a few short days away. But that'll do it for today's show. I am excited to announce, finally, I know I've been teasing this forever, and we finally, you know, kind of lock things down. We will have Packers linebacker Sam Barrington on the show on Wednesday. Excited to talk to him, talk about the upcoming NFL season, talk about the offseason workout program that's now in its second week. Really excited to talk to him. So we'll do that Wednesday. But thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you to Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com for joining us on the show. Lots of great draft insight there. And we'll see you on Wednesday, folks. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show here at 24/7 Sports and CheeseheadTV.com. So we'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Ace in the Hole by the Radiators, the Rads, on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack, go.